Lecture 39, Vernacular Culture.
Welcome once again to our series of lectures on the foundations of Western civilization. This time, lecture number 39, Vernacular Culture. What was happening when the great scholars, the great Latin scholars, were making scholastic culture? A medieval motto held clericus id est literatus. This means a member of the clergy, that is, a literate person. Now, on this reckoning, the person who wrote Beowulf, the person who wrote the Song of Roland, was illiterate. In this lecture, we're going to sort of try to explore this paradox, even as we look at the explosion of vernacular material in high medieval Europe. For surely, the author of Beowulf was not illiterate, though it is not clear that he was a cleric, and he certainly didn't write in English. In Latin, excuse me, he wrote in English. Vernacular is a slightly difficult term to define. Normally, for example, when one uses it of the Middle Ages, it means non-Latin. In other words, English, French, German, Italian, etc. It can also mean popular as opposed to elite. It can mean lay as opposed to ecclesiastical. It can mean secular as opposed to religious. And all of these meanings have been used. The only one that is sort of uncontrovertible is Latin, non-Latin. With all the others, we could sort of argue whether vernacular is the right word, but we'll use it with a wide range of meanings here. Now, it's important to see, too, that vernacular applies to poetry, both brief and epic. It applies to letters. It applies to legal materials. It applies to historical works. It applies to devotional texts. In other words, there is not a single category of material that is vernacular, as if then everything else was somehow Latin. Now, we could put this question, why did some people begin to use the vernacular instead of Latin? Well, suppose we stuck tongue-in-cheek and said that's a matter of perspective. Why in the world did people keep using Latin, a foreign language, for such a long time? Well, the answer in part, of course, is that government and the church continued to use Latin, and thus continued to lend their prestige and their force and their influence to its preservation. The vast majority of people, of course, spoke their own native languages. Elite members of society were probably bilingual, at least bilingual. They would have spoken a vernacular tongue and would have understood some Latin as well. Now, where Latin is concerned, it's also important to bear in mind that Latin was an old and rich language. It had a long-developed vocabulary, a long-developed set of literary forms, all of those kinds of things that were necessary to the production of great literature. It took a long time for the vernaculars to attain that level of development. They did attain it, but it took them a long time. Latin was sort of there from the beginning of the Middle Ages. There's also the very complex matter that we know the vernacular today from the Middle Ages because it was eventually written down. But a great deal of this material had been circulating orally for a long time before it was written down. So there is, in a certain sense, a longer history of the vernacular than we are able to tell. Or we can say that we can write a history of the vernacular and there is a past lurking behind that history. Now, the oldest bodies of vernacular writings emerged in areas that were outside the historical frontiers of the Roman world. That's perhaps not surprising, places that did not have an immediate direct experience of Latin. The British Isles, for example, in the German-speaking realms, in Scandinavia, and also in the Slavic lands. Now, the British Isles present us with two very distinct corpuses of material, one of them in Celtic and one of them in early forms of English. Among the British, we might say Welsh, there were poets such as, for example, Aneurin. Aneurin flourished around the year 600. He wrote a poem called the Gurdin, a poem which was an epic account of the slaughter of the British by the Anglo-Saxons at the Battle of Catterick. It has a wonderful freshness, a wonderful kind of vigor, and it opens up to us the vernacular world from a very early moment. This little extract is revealing. Wearing a brooch in the front of the rank, bearing weapons in battle, a mighty man in the fight before his death day, a champion in the charge of the van of the armies. There fell 50 before his blades of the men of Deira and Bernicia. 100 score fell and were destroyed in a single hour. He would sooner the wolves had his flesh than go to his own wedding. And he would rather be prey for ravens than go to the altar. He would sooner his blood flowed to the ground than get due burial, making return for his meed with the hosts in the hall. Heaven the tall should be honored as long as there is a minstrel.